had a nightmare with my lunch yesterday, and that was so sad. My potato salad was off. It was gross. I don't know what went wrong with it. Then I went into Haworth to try and get some food, and then the soup of the day from Cobbles had cheese in it, so I can have that. And then I was just trying to find it. I ended up with a nice vegan sausage roll from Villette, but, you know, it took a long time to get there.
Yeah.
And your homemade sandwich looked really nice.
Well, you can't go wrong with a homemade sandwich. But on saying that, I also think Villette sausage rolls are amazing.
They are really good.
Yeah, they're really good.
Shout out Villette Cafe. Yeah. I mean, like, we
thank
should
you for saving us.
We should probably shout out every shop in Haworth. We'll get there at some point.
They're all amazing. You cannot go wrong on Haworth Main
Little
Street.
Picturesque Haworth Main Street. Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening. Welcome to Behind the Glass, a Parsonage podcast. This is the podcast where we get up close and personal with an object in our fascinating museum collection. From writing desks to sofas, pianos to spoons, we welcome a new guest each week to bring a Bronte object to life through conversation and creative writing. We're your hosts, Sassy and Sam, from the Bronte Parsonage Museum. We're here to chat all things books, babes and Bronte with new contemporary artists from across the UK. Sam.
Sassy.
Which Bronte are you feeling like today?
I'm going to say Patrick.
Patrick! Ooh!
Because I'm going to be working hard today.
Working hard today, guys.
Some work done. Not that the other Brontes weren't working hard.
No.
But
you're going to be quite stern. You're feeling quite strong. Because Patrick outlived them all, right?
I'm definitely not feeling ill.
Okay, that's good.
So that's, which is rare for me, because I feel like I'm always ill when I'm up here. Patrick's a very inspiring person. So I'm just going to try and channel Patrick today.
Yeah, fair play.
Without the Irish accent. But I'm very bad at accents.
I can't do accents. I don't feel embarrassed a lot. Accents, if I even just try, I can't even look. I was about to try and then I was going to crumble. They make me so embarrassed.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I can't manipulate my voice that way.
This is why I couldn't be an actor.
Some people, it just comes really easy for
them. Yeah.
I can't even try. Yeah. I'm like so close to giving an accent a go right now.
Yeah.
But I will just offend someone.
Do you want to try a Yorkshire accent?
No, I can't. I'll really upset anyone listening and I'll upset the Brontes.
Yeah. And I think it's best none of us do.
Yeah. Try it. Sorry, everyone. We'll give it a go another day. Don't worry.
We will.
So who have we got on for this podcast, Sam?
Well, today in this episode, we are welcoming Bethany Turner Pemberton.
Woo!
Bethany is a PhD candidate in textiles and museum studies at Manchester Metropolitan University in collaboration with the Science and Industry Museum. She is also a workshop host and performer across the north of England, working with museums and heritage organisations to provide art and textiles workshops for adults and children and perform spoken word and poetry performances.
Beth worked with me on the Big Bronte Clothes Swap, which we'll talk about later on. So it's really exciting to have her on.
Yeah, it is really exciting.
Bring her in.
Can't wait to get started.
Like driving over to Haworth and driving over the moors.
It's quite nice, isn't it?
I haven't driven because I've been away on holiday, so it was nice to get in the car and do a proper nice drive.
Yeah,
take my time.
I was just gonna say also fabulous outfit.
Thank
already
you.
Always with the great outfits. I remember the first time I met you and I was like, that has to be Beth because your outfit was so good, and I was like, who's the textiles queen over here? It's me.
Well, hello Beth and welcome to Behind the Glass. Well, we always start the podcast off with asking our guests, which Bronte are you feeling like today? And this can be anyone in the family, pets, anyone.
I didn't consider pets as an option. But I did do a really embarrassing online quiz that told me that I was Anne Bronte.
Excellent.
Which I feel like that's quite cool. Like, I secretly wanted to be Anne Bronte. She's so kind of stubborn and we don't know as much about her, so I feel like she's really mysterious.
Definitely.
So I was really leaning into that when that was my answer on the quiz.
It's kind of like you know, your Harry Potter quizzes where they put you in your houses.
Yeah.
Oh my god, and there's four Bronte siblings.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to assign colours to each Bronte. I
love
it.
So it's going to become the Hogwarts of Haworth.
And
it's like,
you're in yellow today, and Anne does give me a bit of Hufflepuff vibes.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's what I'm channeling then.
Yeah, I think so. I agree about Anne, though. She's quite stubborn and resilient. Yeah.
She's an underdog.
I quite like the underdog.
We all love an underdog, don't we?
Yeah, I really like that.
Great answer. I need to get on that quiz as soon as we finish here. Beth, do you want to introduce yourself for listeners at home?
Yes, so I'm Bethany Turner Pemberton. I am currently doing a PhD at Manchester Metropolitan University, and it's in collaboration with the Science and Industry in Manchester. And alongside that, I run kind of workshops, so textiles workshops or kind of participatory art response workshops, museums workshops, and I'm a teaching assistant at the School of Art in Manchester, so I run the graduate outcomes side of things, which seems really boring, but it's really interesting to work out how people apply the research and the textiles or design practice to the real world of work outside of the art school. Yeah.
Do you have a favourite textile? Is that a weird question?
No, but it's a difficult question. So I would probably say something yarn-based, okay. Because when I was doing my undergrad in textiles, I specialised in knitted textiles, like constructed material. And my research now kind of looks at textiles through a woven or knitted metaphor. So thinking about how all of these strands kind of construct a story or construct a piece of textiles that makes sense as a whole thing. So I quite like the idea of things being tangled, untangled, knitted together, woven together. So yeah, I'm going to go with yarn.
Yeah, that's a good choice.
Beautiful.
Can you knit then?
Yes.
Can you crochet?
Yes.
Oh my God. I always feel like I'm
No more questions now, because then I'll have to say no. And admit that it's narrow.
I feel like you meet people and they're either like a knitter or a crocheter. So the fact that you can do both is pretty impressive.
There's definitely some snobbery. Knitting's a little bit more elitist, I think. Sorry, knitters. Sorry to the knit community. But yeah, I think there's some snobbery about crochet.
Is crochet with the one needle?
Yeah.
Is that not harder?
I think it's easier.
Oh, really?
Because with knitting, you've got two things to hold. So if it goes wrong, you've not got like a third thing to catch the fabric with.
Yeah.
Where with crochet, if something goes wrong, you've got another hand.
Okay.
That's free that can fix things.
When I went to uni, my mum crocheted me versions of our dogs.
Oh, cute.
It was really cute. So I like had them with me at all times.
Yeah. Or maybe I'll crochet my cat.
Yes, do it. I can't believe you've not thought of that yet.
No?
Then you can take them everywhere.
Yeah, I will take them on holiday with me.
What are your cats called?
Mo and Lumi.
Oh.
Very cute.
I'm actually not a cat person, so I don't know why I went, aww. Oh.
Sorry.
You're not a cat person.
Maybe I just haven't met the right cat for me yet.
I think that's true.
So in terms of working with the Science and Industry Museum, what sort of stuff do you get up to?
So my PhD is collaborative with them, which basically means that the research that I do informs some kind of outcome for them. Mm. So basically that's thinking about how they tell contemporary textile stories. So they have a certain amount of stuff in their archive that tells historical textile stories, kind of Industrial Revolution, Cottonopolis in Manchester. And then it peters out a little bit and we've lost the thread a little bit of what they know about what's happening in the region. There's this perceived notion in Manchester particularly that the textile industry has declined and is just, it doesn't exist anymore, which unfortunately is not the truth.
Yeah.
It would be really easy to say it doesn't exist anymore. That's the end of that. We can just have a historical textile gallery. But actually, it's really knotty. Like I said, that metaphor of textiles, it's really knotty and it's really tangled and it's not as straightforward as we produce textiles and then ship it across the UK or across the world. It's a much more connected network of manufacturers, producers, artists, small makers, researchers. So my role within the museum and for the PhD is basically to look at how textiles has this this place, this culture in Manchester society today, still exists, still endures, and how we show that to museum audiences in a way that feels like this is continuing the story of what the museum already has. So all of this textile history, we can then move that forward and say this is what's happening now, and it's a product of being Cottonopolis, essentially.
Yeah. I think that's really important because museums can sometimes be seen as places that, like, existed rather than exist. And actually, like, the continual story, Manchester as a place is so influential in the Industrial Revolution. Mm-hmm. There's still things happening as a result of it.
Yeah, hugely. There's a resurgence of heritage methods of manufacture. So we're seeing people wanting to bring back traditional means of manufacture or traditional types of production, as well as really innovative new materials that are kind of being developed in the city and always have been. So the thread endures. It just looks very different, has a very different face to what it did when we were big warehouses and textile mills. And I think what Science and Industry Museum does really well is that it's so place-based, it's so kind of built into the fabric of Manchester as a city, Greater Manchester as a region, so it represents all of these local stories. So what better way to tell a contemporary textile story about Greater Manchester is to tell it through the lens of a museum that's already really local, already for local people telling local stories, basically.
Shout out Science and Industry Museum, because that was my first job after uni. I was an explainer there, and I loved working there, so big up.
Big up the explainer team as well.
They do a great job. They're legends. I think this is a good opportunity to...
Do some describing.
Okay. Describe time.
So Sassy and I are going to talk through what the chosen object looks like and what it feels like and smells like and the shape of it, without revealing the object though, and see if any of our listeners can guess what it is. Sassy, would you like to start us off?
Yeah, sure. I'll start with puffy.
It's greenish.
Yeah. Spots.
It looks very fragile.
Yeah. And I'd say it's faded.
I feel like I say this with all the objects that we have on here, but slightly brown.
Yeah. That's so true, slightly brown. I'm going to go with pattern.
I'm going to say it looks softish.
Yeah.
But then again, it could be quite
coarse.
Rough.
Yeah.
It could be a mix between coarse and soft. So. Mm-hmm.
And I'd say it's quite bold.
I would agree with all of those things.
Well, Beth, do you want to reveal what your chosen item is?
Yes, so my chosen item is a fragment of Charlotte Bronte's dress from her wedding trousseau.
It's a spot, the spot dress. So it's kind of, I said it was a spot, but actually, I think they're actually really tiny hexagonals.
Yeah. Looking at the pattern of it, they are, they do kind of correlate into little hexagons.
They're like little green ones, and then it's kind of like yellowy, browny material, isn't it? It's really cool. It actually reminds me of my hometown, Norwich City.
Slightly yellow, slightly green.
Norwich City FC. She's repping since day one. Beth, it's a really cool object. Do you want to tell us why you've chosen it?
I've chosen it because I am obsessed with textiles and it couldn't not be a textile object for this podcast. But I've also chosen it because I think the fact that it's a fragment is a really cool thing. Like, we don't have the full dress. Mm. And as much as it'd be beautiful to see the full thing and have that in an exhibition, when I came to Defying Expectations exhibition and saw this fragment, it's just, it gives you a little bit of information and then lets your imagination run wild about what the dress might be like, when she would have worn it. There's some little snippets of information, but just having like one little bit of it just... I don't know, it just gives us so much more to think about than having the full finished thing.
Yeah.
I like the mystery.
Yeah. Did it make you, when you saw it, because whenever I see things like this, especially when it's something unfinished, the first thing I always think is, I want to try and make this, or I want to try and finish off what this looked like.
I love a big sleeve.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I love kind of making textiles and working out how things were made, working out whether the kind of fabric and stuff would have been local and whether somebody local would have made it for her, which I'm assuming is the case with this.
Mm. So I think it's from Halifax, isn't it, the material?
Yeah. Because Halifax was quite known, I think, wasn't it, for textiles? Yeah. I mean, a lot of places around here were, obviously, but...
Oh, yeah, we're in Yorkshire, so the heart of kind of wool and textiles,
And that went global, I think, didn't it? Mm-hmm. Like, it was being sent out across the world, wasn't it?
It's also... quite a bold dress, and I think this is something that's really interesting about the Defying Expectations exhibition, is that a lot of the clothes that we have, or fragments of clothes from Charlotte's, they're actually really cool and bold and interesting, which people might have not thought about her.
This could be a really contemporary piece of kind of high fashion textiles. If you saw this on a catwalk, it wouldn't seem out of place nowadays. If it was a historical reference, fine, but it's so bold. And it was in the room with lots of glass cases of all of the kind of individual smaller objects in the exhibition. And that some of them were so colourful and so kind of not what you expect from a Bronte. So to see it like that was just really exciting. It's really, it seems really contemporary, even though it's not.
There's a very stereotypical view, isn't there, of the Brontes being very dark, gothic, just kind of
very
miserable.
Drab,
but actually, I think... especially with the exhibition last year, it did really show how brave they were in terms of their fashion. And I think there was a quote, and I can't remember who said it. They said about how they remember whenever they saw the Bronte sisters, they were always in a pattern, some kind of pattern dress on or pattern clothing.
That is cool.
So
it makes me think they were more fun than they get credit for.
I think so, definitely.
The thing that we know most about them is that there was a lot of death that surrounded the family.
Mm.
So to then see in the Defying Expectations exhibition, so much colour, so much pattern, so much texture and the kind of fun and frivolity that they had with their clothing is a side that we perhaps don't anticipate from the family.
Yeah, totally.
We were talking earlier with Anne, the curator here, about the sleeve, and obviously it was cut up at some point, most likely by Patrick, for people who wanted something that belonged to Charlotte. And this also happened with her signature in books. She was saying about how as well some clothes were regifted to the servants or people who worked for them, and that they were then resized for other events. I think she mentioned about the wedding bonnet, didn't she? And how it was reused for John Brown's family.
Yeah.
And it was that thing which I guess is very much an attitude which they had back then of reusing things and altering things and not throwing things away. Do you think that's something that maybe we need to bring back in terms of how we approach clothing and...
Yeah, 100%. Sassy will know this because we've done big Bronte clothes swaps before. And sustainability events where we've kind of, I've run the fixing and mending corner. But it's a big passion of mine to basically wear something until you can't physically wear it anymore. Really like darning things, patching things up, altering things to make them fit you, or if they can't be altered to make them fit, then using them for a different purpose, using the fabric, using the component. So the fact that it's a fragment and that that might have been one of the uses, like if you look at the illustration of the skirt, there's so much fabric you could have had however many like children's outfits out of that. So to think that there's life after Charlotte had worn this dress, there's more stories that are kind of woven into the fabric of this cloth, it's really beautiful to me. And that's something that I think is really nice about kind of gifting clothes, mending clothes, swapping clothes like we have here in the past. So yeah, I like that story. I also like the idea that it was cut up and given to people as a kind of memento of Charlotte's life, because there's a lot of ourselves in our clothing. It's a huge connection to memory and connection to a person to take something that is the item of clothing, they've worn it against their skin. So both of those kind of options about why it's a fragment, why there's only the sleeve left, are really beautiful to me. I think that adds to the story of it just being a sleeve.
Yeah, for anyone at home listening, we ran the big Bronte clothes swaps, and they were like community events where people could just bring clothing items, as many as they want, and swap them with other members of the community. And it was a really lovely day because people were talking about what those clothes meant to them, where they got them from, why they didn't fit properly anymore. You were sewing buttons onto coats and things like that. It was really nice, and it was a good opportunity to link the exhibition to, like you're talking about, bringing the museum into the contemporary and learning from the Brontes. And actually, if they were doing it, why can't we? So we've said it's part of Charlotte Bronte's wedding trousseau. What is a trousseau?
Kind of like a dowry,
okay,
but less financial in its context, I suppose. So it will have been like a kind of chest or some kind of suitcase or whatever that will have housed things that she will have used and worn around her wedding. So we don't really do wedding trousseaus anymore, but you might have stuff that you take with you that's kind of like something old, something new.
Okay.
We can kind of relate it to that, I suppose, for the purposes of working out what it is in a contemporary context. But it would have been stuff like, it might be lingerie. Charlotte will have had this dress made as part of the celebrations. It would be something that she would then take with her once she's married, and that might be something that she'd wear to the next big event or whatever it is. Modern versions might be like a wedding perfume or a piece of wedding jewellery and your underwear that you'd wear on the day, like maybe your garter or something. So
it's just a bigger inflated version.
Well,
nowadays it's all like these really like little special things. Yeah. And then this is like their version of sexy lingerie. It's just a giant dress, which is great. And I think I've read somewhere that it's either this one or there's like a grayer one that she might have worn to her honeymoon as well.
Yeah, so it might have been, a trousseau might be stuff that you take with you on honeymoon as well. So it's that kind of, it's the kit that you need as a woman who's leaving home and going to like, essentially live with her husband or move to a new place. And you might go on honeymoon or on a kind of grand tour as part of your wedding celebrations.
God, these dresses are so big, so I think you'd have to buy like extra baggage. Ryanair would not let you have hold of luggage with that.
It would not fit under the seat in front of you.
We've got Charlotte's trunk, haven't we, upstairs in the exhibition room, and it is massive. So it must have been fun trying to carry that around.
Luckily I don't think that would have been tiny Charlotte's job.
I think this is a good point to do four truths and a lie.
Okay.
So, Beth, I've got some facts up my sleeve. That was a good one. And one of them is a lie.
Okay.
And you've got to decide which one. Sam also doesn't know. So you can both play. So today I've got an account from Lady Anne Ritchie. So this is the daughter of William Thackeray, if you remember like the Thackeray dress. And so someone that Charlotte really admired, and when kind of when people found out about that she was the author of Jane Eyre, she kind of met Thackeray. And this is the first time that his daughter met her.
Okay.
And it's what she said about when she met Charlotte. And actually Charlotte was in this dress at that time. Cool. So these are all descriptions from Lady Anne Ritchie about Charlotte. You've got to guess which one is not right. Number one, she said, she is dressed in a little barège dress with a pattern of faint green moss. Number two, she enters in mittens. Number three, she enters in silence. Number four, she enters in sweetness. Number five, my father stoops to offer his arm. For genius though she may be, Miss Bronte can barely reach his elbow.
Well, it is a barège dress, so I'm going to say that number one is correct. Mm. I think she was pretty small, so I'm going to say that number four is correct.
Mm.
So is she sweet or is she silent?
And does she wear mittens?
And does she wear mittens?
All of those I feel could apply.
Yeah, what do you think, Sam?
I'm going to go with the sweet one, because I feel like it's a bit of an odd thing to say. I mean, I don't know, maybe in Victorian times, it's something you'd be like, oh, they entered very sweetly. But...
Okay, you're going for sweet?
I'm going to go for mittens.
Okay.
Because although I've seen Charlotte's gloves in the museum before, I don't think I've ever seen mittens.
Well, no. Sam, you're correct.
Oh!
There we go. I think that's your first right one, right?
I think it is, yeah, in the whole series.
Yes, so it's the sweetness. She did enter in silence and she entered in mittens. I can't actually see mittens going with this dress. Or like maybe there were some funky mittens. Yeah. I've never seen any mittens that she might have had.
No, the only ones I know of are the ones which were like, I don't know if you know if you call them mittens, but they're those fingerless gloves.
Oh, like a wrist warmer.
Yeah.
So maybe they were described as that by her.
Because
in London, it's really hot, so they don't need, like, gloves.
Yeah.
And then up in Yorkshire, she's like, what are those mittens? It's interesting. She talks about Charlotte's height, obviously. Mm-hmm. Is she 4'11"?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
4'11", which is tiny. And then, obviously, her waist is tiny as well. So, like, I think something interesting about clothing as a historical object is that they've given us details of Charlotte's height and waist and things like that, which is really important. And clothing items can tell us a lot about a person's personality, but also just a lot about what that person looked like.
I'm assuming that that's how you know that it's Charlotte's dress, because you've got kind of those, you can understand her measurements and obviously there's the descriptors, but with other garments you can see that they kind of run in theme with the size that she would have been and the information that you had already on her size.
Yeah, and I think that's also, so as part of the Defying Expectations exhibition, the really fancy pinstripe dress that took a lot of research into figuring out if it was Charlotte's, that was one of the other things that led us to that, is that it was her sizings and it was her height. It was just so out there and audacious. For anyone listening at home, it was kind of this pinstriped dress with like tassels and frills and... It was very loud and different types of fabrics, and people were very questioning on whether this was Charlotte Bronte's dress because of how, I guess, garish it was.
Yeah.
But with a lot of research from Dr. Eleanor Houghton and Anne Dinsdale, our principal curator, they revealed that it is Charlotte's, and which is really exciting.
It's the closest, I always think, when you see something that was an outfit someone wore, it's the closest you kind of feel like you can get to actually standing in front of them.
Yeah.
Mm. Is there anyone that you've, Bronte or not, anyone from history that you, when you've stood in front of their outfit, they've kind of, it's almost taken your breath away, or you thought, wow.
The Alexander McQueen exhibition in the V&A that was, it feels like it was ages ago now, it probably wasn't that long ago. Just seeing some of those clothes in real life, because you see them on a catwalk, you see them in kind of magazines or books or whatever as a kind of textiles researcher, and then to see them in the room in real life on a body worn in that space, that's kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And then probably sticking with the V&A, David Bowie's outfits.
Oh, they're in so the V&A. Good.
I wouldn't say that I'm the biggest ever Bowie fan, but just to see the, like, those big pants that are like big wide sculptural trousers, to see them in real life and to think, oh wow, it's like being in front of that person, because costume was so much part of his public persona. To see those costumes in that way is kind of mind-blowing.
It's just interesting, I think, because it makes them real in a way, doesn't it? It's It's a similar thing. I always think when you visit someone's grave as well, it's like you kind of stand and you go, oh, they were real.
Yeah.
They're a real person. So and I think clothing does
so
that.
Much authenticity with clothing, especially with the Bronte stuff. There's loads of research that's gone into working out which part of the family would have worn it and what occasion they might have worn it to and who made it. And all of these kind of supporting objects, the ephemera that goes with it, that tell us those stories. It just gives us so much authenticity that it's like, oh, they're almost in front of me, like the blue pinstripe dress on the mannequin. It's like she could have been in the room with you.
Yeah.
Do you have a favourite piece of clothing that you own?
Yes. I spoke about it at the last clothes drop that we did. So I have a denim jacket that my uncle, so my mum's brother, gave to me that has kind of been passed around our family. So all of the cousins in our family have kind of had it and worn it. Mm-hmm. So when he gave it to me, and it kind of had bits of us kind of embellished onto it, or like it doesn't fit someone anymore, so then the next cousin gets it. It's not a family heirloom, but it feels like something that I will then keep and give to somebody else.
Yeah.
Reluctantly, when it doesn't fit me anymore. The fact that it's got like bits where someone will have rolled up the sleeve and then there'll have been like a sun bleached patch, so that when you roll the sleeve down, you can see that that's where their elbow was and things like that. So to know that there's genuine wear and tear from when my cousins wore it before me, it's really nice to have that object.
That's really interesting. So do you feel a bit like a detective sometimes with clothing? Because even the way you were describing that then, and I never really thought about it like that, but do you, even when you see old clothing, like the Bronte's clothing, is it a case of where you can kind of look at it and you're like, oh, well, this is like this because this must have happened, or...
I really like that part of the story. So I really like when you see things in museums and they've not been completely cleaned of all of the stains. Mm. So if you've got, I don't know, a garment that has a big patch of something stained or a big tear in a certain section, you can start to see parts of life in the garment that if that was cleaned and repaired, you wouldn't know that's what the life of the garment would have been like. So to see those marks and the kind of justification that it's been worn and used, and that's that person's kind of life in the fabric, is a really nice thing, I think. And I don't mind a little bit of wear and tear because it does tell a story about a garment anyway.
This might sound like a really stupid question, but what is the process of making clothes? Like, how do you get from the raw material to like what we wear? Could you give the listener at home a sum up of how it goes?
I can do
a
very crude explanation of how cotton works.
Yeah.
So it's picked off the plant, those little fluffy cotton buds, and then it's kind of combed, and it goes through processing, which takes out all of the fibres that aren't suitable, all of the kind of dirt and stuff that's natural, like bits of bugs, bits of twigs and things. And then it's spun into a fibre after all of the processing. It's spun into a yarn, which is then either woven or knitted. In cotton's case, it's normally woven, which is where you have fabric that goes one way and fabric that goes the other way, and they kind of interlink and create a solid structure. And then you would buy that from whichever shop or wherever you would buy your fabric from, and you'd cut out a pattern, and then you kind of just stitch that pattern together in a way that makes the clothing seem 3D. So it's quite hard, I think, sometimes to imagine how a pair of trousers might be made, but essentially it's four pattern pieces, and you stick them together at the crotch and then sew the sides up and put a waistband on, and it's done. So it seems quite complicated, and most people could look at their garments and think, oh, I can see that pattern piece relates to that pattern, or you could kind of take clothes apart and work out how the pattern is made by taking the panels apart along the seams, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So from the raw material, there's so much process that goes into cotton. There's so much investment, and as much as a lot of it's automated nowadays, there's still so much human impact in cotton and in the way that we manufacture clothes, which would have been the case even in the Bronte's day.
Yeah.
So the way that we process cotton now probably hasn't changed drastically. Slightly more automated. There are lasers and sensors that tell you when things have snapped, not a bloke running up and down fixing broken ends. But the way that we spin and weave is essentially the same. And there'd still be a tailor that would make that garment. If you took that to a seamstress, they could probably still make Charlotte's trousseau. So. Mm.
And here in Haworth, I think, was it wool combing, I think, that was a big thing?
I think so.
And that was something we've touched on before on this show with the Babbage Report.
Oh, yeah.
Because apparently, and I'm not too sure why, but the houses had to be kept really warm or something and dark, and that's often where illness would come from.
Yeah. But so this part of the country, this kind of the northern belt, not to group Yorkshire and Lancashire, because there'd be another war.
How dare you?
But we're really uniquely situated, especially in Manchester, because we've got so many canals, and Yorkshire has Leeds Liverpool Canal. So it's kind of warm in those environments. It's kept quite warm. We're damp because we've got a lot of rain, and it creates this humidity that means that the fabric is really easy to work with. So if you have really, really dry cotton, it's really hard to spin and it would break more easily. So on all of those machines that you'd see in the working bit of the Science and Industry Museum, or if you go to like Quarry Bank Mill, for example, if it's really dry in those environments, the cotton snaps much more quickly and it's much more prone to breakage and damage,
right?
Which A is wasted time and B is more labour. So it's just a huge amount of cost. So this part of the country with its kind of wet climate, I suppose, is ideally situated to weave because it keeps the moisture in the fabric. It makes it easier to use and cheaper, which is obviously what they would have wanted in the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah.
You can hear our little bell going. That's like, go back to the workhouse in the mill.
Yeah, it breaks over.
Yeah. I remember from when working at the Science and Industry Museum, I guess one of the major things that's changed is the working conditions. Because back in the days when the Industrial Revolution was booming, they were having tiny children going in and like risking their lives to like tie up these pieces of string, right?
And to clean, children would have swept underneath the machines where really adults are kind of too big, and our backs and shoulders are too big. So they would have slid children under to scoop all of the kind of waste cotton and fibres up.
God.
But there's just, illness is a big one. And I suppose when you said it's kind of dark and damp and you'd be breathing in the cotton fibre, if you're spinning, think of all of the kind of dust that would come off the raw cotton fibre. You'd be breathing that in. So there'd have been loads of respiratory diseases, I suppose, that relate to having lots of fibre in your lungs.
How do you relate to the Brontes? When did you first kind of come to them in life?
I will have read them when I was quite young because my mum was really into historical fiction. We will have read the classics kind of at home. It will have just been something that I would have read. I was a voracious reader when I was little, so the connection would have been that I'd visited Haworth with my mother-in-law, who's from Brazil, so she is really interested in anything that's kind of really British and kind of quintessential. So we've been to the museum a few times before, just as museum fans, I suppose. And I continue to read the Brontes. Like, I will go back to them and read their poetry, or I'll go back to them and read their novels every now and again. And it feels like I said, when I was driving over the moors, you can really see like Bronte country kind of emerge out of all of the industry.
Yeah.
And it's really beautiful to have that connection, to be so close to them, to be so close to the landscape that they lived in and wrote about.
What does your mother-in-law think of the museum?
Yeah, she loves it.
Oh, good. That's really nice. Okay, brilliant. Well, I think it's time for our favourite part of the pod.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
This is the creative interpretation. So we ask our guests each week to respond to the object in some sort of artistic form. And it's kind of like your 5 minutes to do what you want to do, say what you want to say, and also plug anything if you want to as well.
Cool.
So take it away.
So I've actually got a bit of kind of writing, a sort of short essay that I've written that will end with a little poem that's inspired by all of the kind of conversations that we've had about mending and wearing and fixing and all of the memory that's imbued in clothes. So in my research and writing about textiles, I often draw on metaphors to help articulate how bound in cloth our lives really are. Phrases like the fabric of life, or telling somebody a story by spinning them a yarn, illustrate the intangible way textiles is connected to our everyday lives. As the Defiant Expectations exhibition has shown, textiles form all aspects of our lives, holding memory and telling stories. It's interesting for us to think about the fragment of Charlotte's dress as speaking to us, as there is no real autobiographical documentation of her wearing the dress itself. Her letter about the purchase of the fabric goes some way to demonstrate its importance to her, but it is this fragment, amongst other exhibition items of Charlotte's clothes, that start to paint a picture of her life in cloth. The proximity of clothing to our bodies impresses upon the fabric a unique sense of memory and identity. Life is tucked inside the pleats and folds of Charlotte's clothing, and the fragment of this celebratory dress holds traces of the wearer. The garments in Defiant Expectations form a collection of archival information that transports us from the present to the past, sharing knowledge in intimate and emotional ways. Textiles have a distinctive way of capturing us, as they are something that we are so intimately familiar with. You don't have to be a passionate knitter or an expert seamstress to feel a strong connection to clothing. Our clothes often speak for us and to us in ways that feel hard to express until we see a fragment of a special dress in an exhibition case and we suddenly see why textiles are bound with identity and anecdote. Perhaps this object stands out to me because I'm a textile maker and researcher, but it also speaks to so many other museum visitors because of their own personal experiences with clothing and textiles. We may be seeing Charlotte's excitement in her letter to Elizabeth Gaskell, but this fragment is interpreted differently by each viewer as they recall clothing from special occasions in their lives. Textile and dress in this sense act as a catalyst for the stories of our lives. Woven with the threads of memory, the fragment of dress we have been talking about today tells us so much about Charlotte, but it also tells us so much about ourselves. I'd like to end on a poem that I've written inspired by the Defying Expectations exhibition and the conversations that we've had about clothing and memory in the podcast today. Tightly spun thread and neatly knitted cloth has held our history for as long as words. Longer. Our identity woven into the fabric of our clothing. Is it? Is there a memory in a sleeve or a story in a seam? They hold us close, armour for our emotions. They betray us, unravel at the edges, a memory snagged on a door handle. What secrets do these garments hold? Pressed tightly into closets, folded neatly into chests. Personalities stitched into the lining of your favourite coat, waiting to perform on life's stage. Living, breathing, knowing. Telling us just enough, but not too much. Weaving our entire lives in front of us.
Lovely. Oh, wow. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That was lovely.
That was gorgeous. I love that idea of the memories almost like hiding in the little folds, the pleats, like you say.
Yeah. I think we have so much textiles language in the way that we speak. And like I said, the kind of fabric of life, or we talk about, oh, spin me a yarn and it's telling somebody a story. There are so many bits of textile stuff, like even to be on tenterhooks is about drying textiles fabrics and the hooks that they would have dried them on. So it's kind of, it's really part of our language, and whether that's because we have so much textile history in the UK, I'm not sure, but it's a beautiful thing that we're kind of so bound with textiles and clothing, and it's a huge part of our identity. So I think it's a really big part of my research to kind of understand that culture a little bit.
It's really cool. How much longer have you got of your PhD?
As of October, I've got a year left.
Oh,
which is quite scary.
Yeah, you know. A year left.
But it's going really well.
Good.
I'm at the point where it still feels really lovely and exciting. So
that's good.
That might change. But yeah, it's been great. I've been working with lots of Greater Manchester's kind of textile producers, manufacturers, makers, and it's been such a lovely opportunity to connect with them and get ongoing conversations that essentially won't end after the PhD ends. No PhD is really finished, especially a collaborative one, because it's essentially opening the door for Science and Industry Museum to continue that research, develop those collections through looking at my research and seeing what they might collect as parts of contemporary collecting objects and the way that they show that to their audiences. So it won't really be done, which is a lovely feeling for me, because it's just the start of the next chapter for the museum.
Yeah.
So it's nice to see that it's got some longevity as well.
And then in terms of, like, because I know the museum's under a lot of like reconstruction at the minute. Can you give us an insight into like what's happening when things reopen?
Yeah. So they have been, the kind of power hall section has been closed for quite a bit while they work out how to retell those stories in a contemporary way. And then there'll be a new master plan gallery, hopefully, that my research will contribute to, called City of Ideas. So they'll have the current textiles gallery will be slightly reworked, and then City of Ideas will look at how Greater Manchester as a region and Manchester as a city is a city of ideas, is a city of kind of pioneering bits of investigation, manufacture, research. So there'll be a textiles thread. through the City of Ideas gallery, but there'll also be science and computing and bits of technology that Science and Industry Museum does so well. So it will continue to tell the story. It'll open the door for contemporary collecting, more ongoing and modern relationships with the manufacturers and researchers in the region. And it will mean that there's kind of more longevity for the archive and the collections and stories that the museum intends to tell for years to come.
Amazing.
It's really exciting.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
I think they really, because they're part of Science Museum Group, there's a lot of pressure for them to tell stories that are of international importance. And actually what we need to do is really recognise that parts of the north, like Yorkshire and Greater Manchester in this case, we are internationally important.
Yeah.
We have been, and we still are. Yeah. And we will continue to be. And by telling the local stories and celebrating the kind of place-based stories that Science and Industry Museum does really well, and that hopefully my research will do, it just goes to prove that we are still of global and international importance.
Yeah, definitely. Fantastic.
Right, well, imagine in 100 years' time, there is a museum that opens up in honour of yourself. what object would you like most to see behind the glass that belongs to you or best sums you up?
The beautifully bound edition of my PhD. No, I'm joking. Maybe the denim jacket.
Yeah.
That I spoke about before. So I knew it would be something clothing related, but now that we've spoken about the denim jacket, because that's not just about me, that's about kind of my family connections and the way that I think about textiles and fashion and fabric. So yeah, probably the family heirloom denim jacket.
I can already see it on display.
Are you going to bind your like PhD research in like yarn? You
should. I hadn't thought of it, but maybe I'll take it to bookbinding. And get them to make it really
that'd
beautiful.
Be cool.
How cool would that be? And then it's like properly embedded through.
Get somebody to weave a really nice book cover for it.
Yeah. There you go.
Gosh,
can't wait to see that. Well, thank you so much, Beth. You've been fantastic.
Thank you.
Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and can't wait to see you again soon.
Yes, definitely. I'll be back.
Yeah, have a good journey home.
Thank you.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye. Ah, that was fantastic.
It was. So what do you think the Brontes would have thought of this?
Yeah, I think they would have found it really interesting seeing how we have like interpreted their clothes, what objects that we've got that still like represent them, and what we think about their personalities through the clothing items that they chose, specifically Charlotte.
Definitely.
I think the Defying Expectations exhibition would have been really exciting for Charlotte because it's showing her in a new light that people maybe don't think of her.
Definitely. And I think it really does bring people to life, you know, the clothing. And I think sometimes we don't always realise how personal clothing is to us and how much it actually says a lot about your personality.
Thanks everyone for listening. Really good to have you here. Thank you to Cassie White for the music and to Sam for the logo.
And a little nod to Harold Mitchell, who designed the original iron sign, which that logo is inspired by.
You can follow us at Bronte Parsonage Museum on Instagram and Twitter, and you'll be able to see all the photos from behind the scenes today, the object and the guests that we've got on. You can visit us at the museum Wednesday to Sunday from 10 till 5. We'd love to see you here. And if you've got any thoughts about the podcast, please do send it our way.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Excellent. See you soon.